Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out UnitedHealthcare insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood, tips and tricks,
products we love,
and brands that we can't live without. Let's get into it.
Hello. Hello, how are you?
Oh, George, it's so nice to chat to you. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm currently on, what is it? I mean, I don't know, day 550 of being stuck in the house with two children and Judgy James.
God, how have you coped with all of that?
Do you know what? It's actually been okay, weirdly, because I think the last time we were all locked down, we didn't have an end date. Whereas with this time, we're obviously, we can't even go out for exercise or anything. We are in our house and garden and that's it. There is an end date. So I think it's a bit easier.
You're an absolute saint. And I just like to say that I love the fact that you've turned it into a positive, because that is just you all over, isn't it, G? Tell me that at the end of the day, you fucking kick your feet against the wall and scream and have a minor tantrum. Just a little
one. Do you know what? I want to say that I thought I would. I really did. Like, I mean, before last lockdown, I did. It was horrendous. But actually this time around, maybe we're just good at it now. Maybe we're used to it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not going to be as hard. If you know, I mean, there's probably quite a few parents listening to this whose kids have been sent home from school and been told they've got to quarantine for 14 days. I think it's something that a lot of us are going to have to get used to, I guess.
Yeah, and also, I don't know about you, but I found it slightly strange week or so, because obviously, you know, the kids are picking up bugs because they've been back at school. And, you know, I was a bit coldy last week and I was sort of having to make all these excuses like, oh, you know, it's just a cold and I didn't want to sneeze, or I didn't even want to cough in public. And there is a bit of a weird energy around the place. So I'm definitely feeling it. In fact, I'll be completely honest with you. I did feel the weight of everything over the last kind of 4 or 5 days, just like obviously after Boris's announcement and all the pubs and everything closing at 10. And it just feels like we're going backwards again, doesn't it?
I know. It's such a weird time, but also how weird. Like, you know, you can go to the pub and be with like 100 people or whatever inside the pub. And, you know, apparently you can catch coronavirus, but you can share a bunk bed with your husband who's got coronavirus and not catch it. How is that?
I cannot believe that you got a negative test result.
This is what I think. I mean, I don't know what to believe anymore.
Your post killed me when you were like, I've been practicing socially distancing myself from James for the last 10 years. Amazing. But also, how do you even start comprehending, if you work in the theatre or the arts industry, the fact that you can sit on a plane with 300 other people, but you can't go and sit in a theatre? I mean,
With regurgitated air on a plane. This is what I don't know. I don't know what to say anymore. This whole couple of weeks has been such a weird experience.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We just got
I'm lost for words.
There's
on
two
this.
Things we need to do through this: is keep having these conversations over the podcast, and just drink. We've got to drink through
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
And, oh my god, how exciting is this week?
I know, it's really exciting. We've got a great interview lined up, haven't we, Zoe?
I say it at the top of the podcast when we get into the chat, but this really was a moment where George and I just went, is this actually happening? Because, I mean, she is a megastar, this lady, and she's married to a megastar. She's been on our screens for the last however many years. She's done everything from singing to dancing to presenting to, you know, acting. And she, not only that, but she's just, every time you see an interview, every time you see her talking on the telly or you see it in the press, you just think, oh my God, she's just one of us. Even though she's all of those things, she's just super down to earth. She's got a wicked sense of humour. And we knew that we were going to get a really honest chat from her, didn't we?
Absolutely. I think we should get straight into it.
Oh, come on, who are we chatting to today, G?
Today we are chatting to Ida Williams.
So, welcome to another episode of the podcast. To be honest with you, this is a bit of a pinch me moment on the podcast today because this guest is somebody that we have both wanted to sit down with since we started these chats, like, what, 2.5 years ago?
Yeah.
She is known on both sides of the pond for her very, very straight-talking attitude and her brilliant humour. She is a presenter, an actress, a model, a mum. She's got 4 kids, Teddy, Charlie, Coco and Beau, and she's wife to, well, pretty much one of the biggest names in music. But in our eyes, she's the star. Yes, today's guest is Ida Williams.
Yay!
Wow. Wow, that was quite the intro. I feel a lot more special than I do normally. Wow. I was like, can you just read that to me before I go to sleep so I feel good? That was amazing.
I'm going to put it on a voice note for you and then you can just play it for yourself. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was good at that.
I'm not sure I'm that impressive, but go on then. I like it. I'll take it.
Welcome, welcome. How have you been? How's lockdown been? And how's the summer been? And kind of talk to us about how life at the Williamses is.
Wow. I mean, lockdown. What a weird fucking time we're living in, huh? Like, just bizarro. I don't know. I feel like lockdown has been an incredibly bipolar experience in the sense that there's just been so many highs and so many lows. And it's been like, there's been moments in it where I think when we all, you know, this all broke out and this all happened, it was like free fall. It was like, oh my God, what the fuck do we do? Oh my God, we're in the house. What do? We can't get food. We can't get toilet paper. You know, it was just like, it was weird. It was like, there was moments when we didn't have any food in our house. And I was like, oh God, wow, this is okay. You know, And then there were been moments where, you know, you do that thing where you're like, wow, this is great. I'm getting to spend time with my family. We're normally running around doing stuff. I don't really need to be doing anything. I don't even need to shave or wash or just present myself in any kind of civilized manner because no one's going to see me. And this is really awesome. This is cool. This is what life's about, you know, and like me and my kids, and this is good home time. And then it'll like would flip into, get the fuck out of the house. Get me the fuck out of here. My kids are driving me fucking crazy. You know, it was just, and then it'd be like, no, it's fine. I got it. I'm in a rhythm. Yeah. I get quarantined.
Yeah, it was weird, isn't it, like that? Massive high. Yeah.
Did you guys go through the period where you didn't like, because I went through a very long period where I actually just slept in and wore pajamas all day long.
Like, yeah, do you know what? It's so nice to hear you talk about it like that because it's been exactly the same in our houses, hasn't it, Zoe? And I'm actually going through it again now because my husband's got COVID. So I'm in the house for 2 weeks and it's quite good to remind myself of what it's going to be like, what we're going to go through over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But were you like the crafty family, like doing the crafts and the baking, or were you the like, let's not do any of it?
I was a bit shit mom, I think. I don't know. I mean, like, I got really excited because I had these friends that were taking up crafts and I was like, I'm going to take up a craft. So I got like a needlepoint set because I was like, that's the way forward. And Rob was doing all sorts of art and I was like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to just languish in self-pity and chocolate. I'm going to pick up a craft. And then the fucking kit came. The kit came, by the way, like 3 months later, because of course everything was on back order. So at that point, my like fervor for picking up a craft had completely subsided and I just didn't care when it came. And I didn't order the right parts. And it was like, there was like other needles I needed and those were on back order. So I just kind of, that never happened. With the kids, I mean, I did a lot of baking, but I don't even know if it was like, it wasn't pretty cute, like let's do themed baking or cupcakes.
So
it was just like, I just want to eat cake, so let's just make cake. It was just like,
if the cake ends up looking like a giant turd, at least it's a cake.
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly. It looked like a turd. There was nothing cute about it. You know, it was, it was just an excuse to basically feed our emotions with sugar. So that was what we did. I think there were moments where I felt really proactive with my children, like this is great because I'm gonna teach them things about life and we're gonna learn to garden in the back garden. We're gonna plant tomatoes and avocados. And then there were days where I was like, do you guys wanna watch Netflix?
Is it
just Netflix day? And we got really good into watching 80s films. If that's a craft, then yes, I did craft.
Georgia, I knew we were going to love this woman because she's basically, this is basically what every parent thinks, but it's not sometimes what you see. It's not the curated version on Instagram that you sometimes see. And I think there can be a lot of insecurity instilled because you see all these amazing parents doing all of this shit and you're like, oh my fucking God, I have not made a dinosaur out of a bog roll today. So I feel like a complete failure.
No. There were no bog roll dinosaurs. There were no hand sanitizer castles. I mean,
I didn't see those.
I just made that up, but I'm sure some bitch did that and it wasn't me. But, you know, I mean, there were moments where I felt like enlightened a bit where I did more. And I did things like I set up a little teepee area for them to sleep in. But I wouldn't call that kind of going past and above and beyond. Like, I did my best. I think we all tried our best. There were definitely moments where I felt like I was in my groove, and then moments where I thought I was the worst parent in the world and that my children were pissing me off and when is this going to end? So, you know, I'm definitely not a perfect mom, I would say. It's definitely never been a description I would pin on myself. I did my best. You know, like my kids did their best. My husband did his best. I think, you know, the world was going a bit mad. I tried to start taking my kids on hikes because we have this hike in our back garden. We're really lucky. We have this like kind of mountain. So I kind of started by, there was a moment where I thought we were going so stir crazy that there was, you know, we really didn't leave to go walk or anything. So we went up the back of the house and we started doing meditations.
Wow.
Which seemed to help. But then even that, it kind of fell by the wayside at a certain point because like, oh yeah, we've done that now. But, you know, I think also for me in the backdrop was my mom at the end of January was diagnosed with cancer. So it was a really hard time. And it was like 2020 started off with a really shit note for me anyway, in that sense. And so I think there was like in the backdrop of all this stuff, there was just so much fear and panic about my mom and taking care of her and then having to move her out of the house because she lives with us, but being afraid of the kids touching her or somehow getting something, you know. So I feel like there were these ebb and flows where I felt super proactive and super inspired. And then literally it could be the next day and I didn't want to get out of the bed. And I was like, this is suffocating and overwhelming. And how are we going to live like this? So, you know, I don't know. I wasn't Mary Poppins. And I wasn't, you know, what is it? Mama June from what is the Honey Boo Boo family where she's like a crack addict. I wasn't that. I wasn't Mary Poppins. I was somewhere in the middle. Somewhere happily, maybe slightly tipsy in the middle.
Listen, Ida, before we kind of get into your life as a parent and we want to talk to you about Robbie as a dad and stuff, I kind of wanted you to like cast your mind back to your life in America before you ended up living in the UK with your now husband. How did you end up in Los Angeles and kind of was it always your ambition to work in showbiz and media and telly and stuff?
Well, I was born in Los Angeles, so I was just there by birth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was plonked there. I was conceived there and I was forcefully birthed there against my will. So, you know, LA's always been home to me. I think I always wanted to be an actress, but I think because I grew up in LA and I saw so many aspiring actors, models, dancers, writers, producers, you name it, around me, I thought it was like the worst cliche. So for most of my childhood, teenage years, I actually tried to do everything but act because I thought it was like the worst conclusion my life could have was to be an actress. I just thought, no, I'm a smart girl. There's better things I can do. Let me just focus at school. So I did really well at school and I was studying to be an international tax attorney because I just thought that was the most stable job where I could travel and take care of myself. I didn't really want to be in Los Angeles because I, you know, my grandmother grew up in Paris. My uncle lived in London. I felt very European, even though I wasn't. And so for me, I actually wanted to get out of Los Angeles. But then, you know, this acting thing, I just couldn't outrun it. It was really what I wanted to do. And I got, you know, when I finally made that decision for myself and I decided I was not going to be a tax attorney, I then got very lucky. And I mean, through this very bizarre, crazy story. And if I were to tell you, it would be the whole podcast. But I got very, very lucky and booked this job on a soap opera called Days of Our Lives.
Yes, I know.
And, And it was literally like my first audition. So, you know, it was, by the way, totally deceiving because it made it look like it was really easy to get acting jobs. So I was like, oh, why didn't I do this before? It's super easy. You just go out and they give it to you. It kind of started because I was in LA and I came back from university and I didn't know how to get started. And the acting classes at UCLA, which I thought were good. I didn't know acting. I just knew UCLA had a good acting department, but I had to do nighttime school because, you know, I wasn't at the university. And the only class they had open was performing stand-up comedy. So I enrolled in that halfway through. And, you know, the lady who taught the class thought I was really funny. So she said, why don't you perform at the Comedy Store? So I performed my first performance at the Comedy Store. An agent came up to me and he said, hey, you're really funny. What's your deal? I'd like to send you out on a few things to see how you do. And the first thing was Days of Our Lives. And so I wasn't represented by him. He just wanted to see. So I booked it. And then, you know, then I decided I wasn't going to be a lawyer.
That was done pretty quickly. Days of Our Lives is the program in Friends that Joey Tribbiani got the role. Yes, right. That's
exactly
the one.
Exactly. By the way, do you know that Julia Roberts is a fan of the show? And I've always felt like, God, wouldn't that be nice to meet Julia Roberts, who's like one of my acting heroes, and like think that she might even know who I am if I put on an Italian accent and introduce myself as Angela Moroni.
I love that too, by the way. Oh my God,
she's great.
In fact, my whole outfit the other day was basically, you know, the end scene in Pretty Woman where she's climbing out of the sky, got that black blazer.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
That was me.
Okay, I like that. That's so sexy. Was that school pickup or what was that?
Literally just down the shops for some milk.
Perfect. Why not? I hope you got a pint for free.
So you're in the show in America, in Los Angeles, How do you end up meeting Robbie Williams?
Well, okay. So at the time, I was on a show called Studio 60, or Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, which funnily enough was with Matthew Perry from Friends. So the circle continues. Anyway, so I was on this show called Studio 60. I don't know why I'm struggling with my S's today. Studio 60. And I was on Warner Brothers stage, and next to it was an actor, funnily enough, who I had been on a show years ago called Eve, which was a sitcom with Eve, the rapper. And it was an actor named Sean McGuire. And yes. And he was on the stage next to me on whatever sitcom he was on. Which I had almost got. So it was like this weird incestual thing. So anyway, we were working on these stages and we worked on a show kind of together years ago, but we didn't really know each other. And he was friends with a mutual friend called Callum. So every year for my birthday, my brother would have a dinner at this restaurant called Trader Vic's in Los Angeles. And Callum was a really good friend of ours. And so he invited Callum to stop by his birthday dinner. And I guess they were en route to a party to meet Robbie or something. So Callum brought Sean. They came to dinner. I was at the dinner. And I don't know. It always came down to why I was single. Every meal I had from like 23 onwards was, why are you single? So anyway, so they sat down and they start saying, well, we're meeting a friend. Robbie, he's great. You guys need to meet, blah, blah, blah. I didn't know who Robbie Williams was. It was like this name that sounded vaguely familiar, but I wouldn't be able to tell you what he looked like, what his songs were. I didn't know who he was. But so they wanted to set me up. I had sworn I would never go on another blind date again because I'd been through a slew of them and they all sucked. And I was like, that's it. I'm done. I'm just over it. I'm going to just be really successful and I'm going to be a virgin, a born again virgin. And I love animals. I'll get an Oscar instead. That's what I'll do. I'll get an Oscar. So, which was totally delusional. Anyway, they give him my number. We start texting. You know, he was on like weird pop star hours where he'd kind of invite me over at like midnight. I was like, who is this dude?
And so did you think that was booty call, or did you think that was just like,
yeah, I was like, are you trying to booty call me? Is this what actually happened? No, well, it turns out he was on weird like pop star hours. So he was getting up at like 6 p.m. That was his like wake up time. And I was working a job. I was on a TV show. So I was getting up at 6:30 in the morning and working like 16-hour days. So there was no way I was, booty call or not, going to be rendezvousing with Mr. Williams at midnight. So anyway, it was just not getting off to a start. Finally, he suggested lunch one day. And I said, okay, let's meet for lunch. And then that day, I never fucking heard from him. And I was like, oh, you bastard. I was like, you stood me up. I was like, listen, there is literally no point to standing. Well, first of all, there's no point to standing anyone up, but like, there's no point in standing up someone you don't know. So the next day I was like, that is so lame. So the next day I bumped into Callum at an audition or something. I can't remember what it was. And he said, how did your date go? And I was like, well, let me just tell you. And I go into this rant about what a wanker Rob is, how he stood me up. And so the next thing I know is that I'm at the pharmacy or the market, and I get this private caller on my phone. And we all know, we never answer a private caller.
Yeah, never. It's always Batman. It's really annoying.
It's never good. Yeah, it's never good. There's no one like really awesome that calls private caller ever. So he leaves this funny message. It's him, and it's something like, to know me is to hate me, but you can't hate me till you know me. And he makes some joke, and I laughed out loud. I was like, oh crap, he's funny. He's funny, which is like my biggest weakness. So we finally end up making a plan. All I will say, it was the most bizarre, insane, rock star, pop star, crazy first date. And at the end of it, I was totally smitten.
We've heard you talk about the love attacks on your podcast. Was it a love attack?
It was a love attack. At first it was like, who's this weirdo attack? And I'm not into this guy attack. I was not into him for the first bit of the day. It was weird. And he can explain why one day, but he was a weirdo. But
he
there was
a weirdo on the date.
Like at the beginning, it was like his house was dark. It was all brown. He was like, it was quiet. It was just like, we were like sat in the dark. I didn't know what the fuck was happening. Like, where am I? It was like The Shining. I was like, who is this guy? My friends called because he said, I'll take you back to the party because there was a party. And they were like, are you all right? It seemed really weird because they had dropped me off. I was like, no, I'm fine. I think they thought I was going to get killed. So by the way, in America, we don't really know who Robbie Williams is. So he could be a serial killer. So anyway, he was not a serial killer, obviously.
Thank God for that.
Thank God. Thank God.
Tattooed pop star serial killer. I mean,
can I just say I was super impressed by the tattoos because I had never dated a guy with tattoos. And when he took off his shirt, I was like, oh my God, what a bad boy. I mean, it was like so cliche because I'm so square. I don't have a single tattoo. So it was like, oh, I'm being so naughty. Do you know, it was just like, it was silly. But he, you know, we had this moment on the couch and I swear to God, there was something really divine that happened where all of a sudden the universe opened up and I totally and completely understood who this man was. And he totally completely understood who I was. And I felt like it was an electric moment. I felt like I'd known him my whole life. It was bizarre. And it was a very palpable feeling. And it was funny because I didn't say that to him at the time because I thought that will come off strange if I go, hey, did you feel that really electric moment? I thought, not the best thing to say. Yeah. Play it cool, girl. And then later when he was telling the story of how we met, maybe like a year later, he described this moment on the couch and he was like, it was like this electric moment on the couch and then proceeded to describe it in the exact same way.
Oh,
so I was like,
wow.
So it was a thing. It was officially a thing, I'm going to say. So, you know, ever since then, he's my little Bezzy, and it was an up and down roller coaster. We got together, then he broke up with me, then it happened back together, broke up, and by the third time, finally, when I almost had just completely written him off, he kind of figured it out, and we've been together ever since.
I mean, sometimes they need it. Sometimes they need that little, you know, nudge.
Little kick up the butt.
Whatever it is, yeah.
When did you decide you wanted to have kids with him?
Do you know what? It was so funny. When I met Robbie, he said, I never want to get married and I never want to have kids. So I would just like to say that I'm always right.
Yes.
So I actually, you know, it was funny with kids. I was never one of those people that was like rushing to have kids because it was this desire that I thought, okay, I hope one day I want to have kids, but I didn't have this like burning desire. Like a lot of my friends were like, oh, I can't wait to be a mom. And I didn't have that. I was like, I hope one day I want to be a mom. Cause I was kind of concerned that I didn't have any feelings about it. And then it was when I met Rob and was so deeply in love with him. And we had this life together and all of a sudden creating life with him and creating a family felt very right and became something I really wanted. But until that point, it really wasn't on the cards for me. I hadn't fantasized about my wedding. I hadn't fantasized about having kids. I thought, gosh, I hope I want them, because I'm not going to have kids just to have them. And I'm not going to get married just to get married. And I hope I have that feeling, because what if I don't, and will I miss out on something really special? And thankfully, I met the right person. And those feelings came very organically for me. And then I really wanted to have lots of children.
Yes, it's weird, isn't it? If you have spent your whole life looking after you, from the sound of things, you were an incredibly independent person and still are. And so, but I think people that come from there, they don't necessarily dream of, like, I never wanted to be a mother. I never even envisaged holding my own baby or being pregnant. You know, lots of women do. And I think that's incredible. It just wasn't on my journey, I guess. And then when I met my husband, it was like, bang. I was like, oh my fuck, that's the person I'm going to have a child with. Like, it felt very electric. It felt very chemical, and it felt brilliant. But it was never in the plan to do it.
It's so nice to hear other women talk about that, because there was definitely a period where I felt like there was something wrong with me because I didn't have those feelings. Do you know? Like, it wasn't like I thought babies were cute, but I actually thought puppies were cuter. Do you know? It wasn't like if you were like at a park and there was like a puppy and a baby, like, I know who I'd be running to, and it would be barking. Do you know what I mean? So it's like nice to hear. Yes. I'm glad you guys kind of had that feeling, because I think for so many women, it comes really naturally, that feeling. And for those that don't have that feeling, there can sometimes be this doubt within yourself of, oh my God, am I not that person? Or is there anything wrong with me? You know, like, you can have that thought. And I definitely had gone through those thoughts before, going, why do I feel so neutral about it? Why do I feel indifferent about it? Yeah. Like, that's weird.
So when you actually got pregnant, how were you feeling around kind of being pregnant and the labor and kind of the any fears around it? Or did that come quite naturally to you?
I mean, any fears about it? I feel like every fear was there. Well, first of all, when I found out I was pregnant, I was so happy, because at that point I really wanted to be a mother, and I wanted to be, you know, starting this family. And I felt so incredibly blessed to be pregnant. And it was like that weird thing where it's like, oh my God, I'm pregnant. And oh my God, I'm pregnant. You know, it was like, I think the first 2 months I thought the embryo was just going to like fall out of me. I was like afraid to pee. Like, I just was like, walk slowly. Like, you just don't, and you don't even know if it's still in there. You're kind of like checking in, but there's no signs. You know, it was just like, I just remember I read all of the Harry Potter series. I stayed in bed. I was really nauseous.
Wow.
And I would just like walk to the bathroom. Like, there was like some sort of barrel between my legs, because I was really worried something was just going to like plop out. It was just the weirdest feeling. But, you know, my pregnancy was amazing. I mean, once the nausea subsided, that was better. The unfortunate bit was I had gestational diabetes. So kind of like, I only had like a month of, it was like the nausea went away and I was like, oh, finally I can eat. And then about like a month and a half later, it was like, you've got diabetes, you can eat nothing. It was just no.
So tell us what happens when you have gestational diabetes, just for those people who don't know.
Well, it's really annoying. I mean, diabetes runs in my family. I figured it would probably be the case with me. But so the night before I have my test, which is totally counterproductive, I was like, okay, I'm going to get it. I know they're going to tell me I have it, because my mom had it, my grandmother had it. So I just ate a whole tin of Rice Krispie treats, like some sort of thing, right? Like right before you go to rehab, I guess. It was like my prehab. I just like basically wolfed down as much sugar as possible, because I knew they're going to take it away from me. Basically, you do this test. It's like you do the first test, which is you drink some horrible sugary drink, and then you wait an hour, and then you pee. And in most people's cases, they say, okay, you're fine. Obviously, for me, I failed miserably. So then you have to go back and do another test, which really sucks, which is kind of like a 3-hour test. You can't eat anything. You drink the sugary drink, and then you have to test your blood every hour for 3 hours. You can't drink any water. You can't eat any food, and you're in the hospital. And it's really annoying, because actually, if you have gestational diabetes, which I did, you actually feel really sick from that, because you're just pumping yourself. So anyway, so I failed again. So basically what happens is, what you have to do is you have to take your blood 4 times a day, every day for the rest of the pregnancy. So I had like the equivalent of like track marks on my fingers, because I was, you know, I'd be like, and it'd be funny, because you'd have to take it out in public. Like, if you went to eat, you know, and it, people would look at you because you're, you know, you're basically like needling yourself at the table. But, you know, you have to really watch, you have to be really careful with sauces. You know, you end up eating a lot of almonds. There's just no sugar. And for me, I was pregnant in the summertime, so you can't really have fruit. You can have like 10 grapes. That can be your sugar. Or you can have a quarter of a watermelon, you know, but like you can't have anything. It sucks. And if you do, on the odd occasion, like for me, my weakness was Mr. Whippies in the park. So with a flake in it, you know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah, and sprinkles or no, I mean, whatever, yeah. Just shove it all on.
So like when it was hot and I was really feeling sorry for myself, every now and then a Mr. Whippy would make its way into my mouth and I would just walk around the park for like, the best thing you can do is like, I check my blood. I have a bunch of almonds before I would have it just to like stabilize my blood sugar. And then I would just walk for like 45 minutes, half an hour just to drop my blood. But I was very careful because, you know, I was so scared I was going to do something to the baby. So, you know, obviously, you know, as time went on, I, you know, the baby was getting bigger. They wanted to make sure to induce me. Luckily, I kind of went into labor the day before they were going to induce me. But they still had to break my water and they still had to give me the Pitocin to speed it up, which is pretty nasty.
Yeah. Did you have a birth plan?
No.
No.
Well, I wanted to have a water birth, but because I was an at-risk pregnancy, they would not let me have a water birth. By the way, I probably would have, it would have been a disaster. I probably would have pooped in the water and whatever, but they did not let me have a water birth. So I had to do a traditional. All I wanted to do was avoid a C-section because I thought that seemed like the most difficult way to do it because of the aftermath.
Yeah.
What about you guys? Did you have natural births or did you have C-sections? What was...
Yeah, no, we both had, how they say natural births, didn't we, Zoe? Yeah. Both very different.
Yeah, I mean, George and I mean, we had epidurals. I wanted to do the water thing, but then Luna wasn't coming out. It went on and on and on and on. With Kit, who was my second, I knew what, right. You know, you just know what you're in for, don't you? So you're like, do it now. So it was much quicker and much more enjoyable the second time round. But yeah, no C-sections for either of us.
No C-sections. I did have the induction though, and I absolutely feel your pain with how painful that is when it happens.
I had to get induced with both Teddy and Charlie. It was just so unpleasant. It was not fun at all. I never naturally broke my water either, and I swear they put like a knitting needle up you, and it's brutal, man. It's brutal.
It's brutal.
I feel sorry for being so graphic, but I feel like this should be detailed because women, no one told me that someone was going to stick a knitting needle. I didn't even know that was a thing. I mean, it's gory. It's graphic, right?
You really have to like be brave because like you said, none of your friends tell you bits and pieces, but I think everybody holds back because nobody wants to really tell you because if they really told you, you probably would be like, I'm not doing this. I'm not going through this. So I think people do definitely hold stuff back. I wish my friends had been more honest with me. So I was more prepared.
I was so brutally honest with my friends afterwards. Oh, well, like Susie Amy got the full rundown from me. Yeah. Like I definitely, you know what I did before I gave birth to Teddy, which was a really bad idea. It was I watched One Born Every Minute.
Oh no. Oh no.
Terrible idea. If there's anyone pregnant out there, do not watch One Born Every Minute right before you give birth. It's not what you want to do.
No.
Even watching it now, I clench the whole time I'm watching it. I hold my breath the whole time I'm watching it, and then I act like I'm in labor. It is not. Yeah. It is just not a good program for some people to watch.
No, I don't recommend it. I don't.
So we're going to be back with our lovely guest just after this.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Laura Wright, and I'm here to tell you about my podcast, Music in My Life. In this series, I'm talking to some amazing guests about their favourite pieces of music. We'll be delving into the music they listen to and why it shaped them throughout the years.
It's like intense. It made me feel cooler and stronger and harder than I was.
But the man on board had cancer, and that's obviously become a big part of my life.
I can listen to it now, reminding myself where I've come from.
He just completely lost it as we pulled up to the hospital.
You can find it wherever you found this podcast. Just search Music in My Life.
Now, let's pick up where we left off with our wonderful guest.
You've spoken about your feelings before you had the babies and, you know, your fears around, you know, there were a lot of fears, I guess. And also
so many fears
that maybe you didn't want to be a mother before, like I've spoken about as well. What was that moment like when you held Teddy? How did you feel then? Was the bond there instantly or did it take a few months?
Do you know what? No, the bond was there instantly. And I don't mean in some soppy way where it was like, because it's like the biggest blind date ever, right? Like, yeah. It's like, you're like, what are they going to look like? Who is this person? Oh my God, we're together forever now. Luckily for me, I was just, I think maybe, I don't know, maybe because I'd gone through whatever I'd gone through with the diabetes and there were like, you know, the worry or, you know, once she was just in my arms, I was just so grateful she was in my arms. And I just felt so lucky to be her mommy. I just felt overwhelmed with this feeling of my little pink power is here and she's on my chest. And, you know, it was a huge moment of relief and love and exhaustion. And, you know, it was like, here's my family, here's my unit. We did it. You know, but it's a very overwhelming moment. And, you know, also I think what did hit me though, that was difficult was just like, you have this moment, you know, and I have some friends that obviously it took them longer. And that's also very normal to kind of go, okay, you're a stranger. I love you, but I don't, ooh, what is this? And that's also really normal and totally healthy and fine. And like, I feel bad that anyone thinks it should be anything different because your experience is so personal. It just, you know, you're not, one way is not right. One way is not wrong. You're not supposed to feel, it's your own journey. You know, it's your own thing. But what I did find really intimidating was the breastfeeding immediately was I thought that was going to be some really natural, normal, like you just plunk them on, you know, and it was like, you know, like, you know, the colostrum was like a droplet. It was like nothing, you know, it was like my poor baby's going to starve. And then you're trying to like jam your breast in this baby's mouth and you're doing it wrong and someone tells you to hold it like a C and there's people coming in and you're like, why can't I do this? And then it hurts and your boobs feel like bumpy armor. They just feel swollen. And you know, and you're not, I don't think you're prepared for, and the fatigue, you're not prepared for, like, cause you just hit the ground running. And I remember this feeling of like, actually really enjoying being in the hospital because there was someone there to help me and take me through all of it. And I was so nervous to leave. I was like, do I have to leave? Can I stay?
Yeah, you don't want to go, do you? You're kind of like, I sort of want to go, but then who's going to help me? Who's going to do all of this? Oh shit, it's me.
I don't want it to be me. Fuck, I'm not ready for this. And this is a funny thing about my birth that I forgot to say was, so before I finally ended up having an epidural, but before the epidural, I was like really like so afraid of the C-section and that epidural would slow everything down. And I really wanted to like go guns a-blazing. So I just did the gas and air for like 6 hours. And Robbie kept stealing my gas and air. They were passing it around like a It was my mother and my mother-in-law and Robbie. I swear it was like a hookah, and they were passing around, and they would just pass it. I wouldn't even get it from my contraction. They would just, I'd be like, hello, can I get some fucking air, please? Like, literally. And then at some point, Rob got really tired from taking my gas and air and just fell asleep for a couple hours.
Oh, great. So lucky you had your mom and your mother-in-law then, really.
I was very lucky that I had. Although, do you know what's so funny is that they were filming the whole thing from the wrong angle, I would like to say.
Oh, and, God.
Yes. And I never saw the video because why would I watch such video? And I was months later loading something up on my computer that I taped, not knowing it was the same SIM card. And you know when you have like so much data that it like you get the spinny wheel and like the photos freeze? Well, all of a sudden the photos start loading and it freezes on the baby Teddy crowning out of me. And it was like, oh my God. I'm telling you, that is something you never want to see your own body do. It was shocking. It was like Anaconda. It was like some alien shit. It was like, oh my God, I can't believe it did that. And how did it ever go back? It was a remarkable visual that I will never unsee.
But also, I hate to remind you this, but your mother-in-law filmed that. So exactly. She has also that image in her head for the end of time.
Literally, my mom and my mother-in-law have my foof so ingrained in their brains. It will probably be the last thought before they leave this earth is what they
saw. It's your very own one born every minute.
It's my own. Exactly. Why do I even need to tune in? I've got my own episode. But also, oh, and you know what that naughty pop star did? So he had some work to do. He had to leave the next day, and then he had some more work. And I get home from the hospital. I guess he's done Graham Norton, right? But he's not warned me about what he said. And in the interview, I'm literally sitting with Teddy just home from the hospital, and we're watching Daddy on Graham Norton because he had something else. So we thought we'd watch him on TV because he was busy doing something else. And he only goes during the interview, they ask him about the birth, and he says it was like watching his favorite pub burn down.
That is exactly what David says. That's what David says. My favorite pub just fucking burning down in front of my eyes. Yeah.
That was Emma Thompson was on the couch, and I think she took it after that interview and used it. I was mortified. Mortified.
I'm kind of saying that, but also my husband didn't say it publicly to like 10 million people, so I'm sorry.
I think that was the bit. It was the 10 million people thinking about my vagina like that kind of thing. Especially, you're a bit sensitive too when you've just given birth. So I don't know that it was like maybe wrong time, wrong place. I don't know. But, it was emotional. But anyway, I was very lucky. She was healthy and safe and wonderful, and it was a very wonderful delivery in that sense.
And obviously, I mean, there's loads that we could talk, but I'm just wary of the time. So I kind of want to briefly talk about your mental health afterwards, after the kids, how you recovered, how you felt, and your kind of support network and what you lent on. Because if anybody's kind of going through any struggles, how did you find during that period?
You know what? I had a lot of struggles. I mean, I don't know how graphic we get on this thing. I mean, I had tearing.
No, we go.
We share everything.
Okay. So I had second degree tears. That sucks. And there was a situation, I don't even think I can bring myself to say it, but you know, it was, I had to sit on a donut is all I'm going to say. And I felt very gimpy. And then what happened was I got mastitis 3 times, which was just horrendous. And I felt like I was in this vicious pumping, feeding cycle. I had blisters that had popped from the feeding wrong on the breast. I mean, it was like, it was probably it was a wonderful time, but a really low time because I felt so physically depleted. And you're the only, obviously, like no one can do that job for you. And, you know, and I remember being, I had this weird stage where I had the fears in me. I don't know if it was postpartum or, you know, but it was that thing where I was really worried something was going to happen to her, you know, like I would have these very irrational thoughts, something, you know, I would leave the house and I would, you know, I functioned, but I definitely feel like I had a touch of something because there was an abnormal level of anxiety that I was experiencing.
We hear that a lot actually from mums that, you know,
is that postpartum? What is that? Is that just normal? I don't know.
I think, you know, I think it's something that a lot of people go through. I don't necessarily know if it's, you know, completely what's supposed to happen or, you know, classed as normal. But we definitely hear a lot of people say that, especially anxiety around things happening and you being
yes.
sort of having that real motherly instinct to protect. It's a strange thing that comes over you, actually, and you feel very like territorial.
I felt like I was going mental, though. I was like, this is like, why are you just chill out, you know? But, you know, I have to say, like, all those things that happened on my first did not happen with Charlie. You know, he fed better. It was probably I was more relaxed. I didn't get mastitis. You know, I didn't have the same level of anxiety. You know, it was just a very different experience. And maybe it's just a first time mom thing where you're, but I think it can happen, you know, it can happen to anyone. But I was very open about, I think it's really important to be open about, you know, I was open about how scared I was and the anxieties I was having. But I just found, the first few months was tough because of the mastitis and the, you know, and then you're just on an endless cycle of antibiotics. And then, you know, I was just like, oh, I need some sleep. And this is the other thing is you're not allowed to have coffee or wine. And you've just gone through a year of doing that when you need it the most.
Yes, I was like, exactly.
Dear God, help me. I was like, and you'd pump and dump and you'd feel so mixed about it. I was like, is that glass of wine worth it? Yes, it fucking is.
It is. Absolutely, it is.
You do what you can to get the bloody glass of wine. How was Robbie during this period? And was he kind of understanding about what you were going through? Were you vocal with him or were you bottling it up and keeping it?
I'm not going to lie. Rob was useless. Robbie Williams was useless. He was on the like sleeping 14 hours regime and wake me up and kind of like he'd wake up after me being up all night with the baby and he'd be like he'd wake up literally after like 14 hours and be like, oh, I'm so exhausted. I was like, there were these moments where I wanted to be like, you know, like the ice pick out, you said what, you know, like, you know, he was in Robbie world and he was working and it was fine. But you know what I will say, he has changed many diapers. He was very good. As once he was awake, once he was conscious during the day, he was very attentive and very good at taking care of the baby and being a great daddy. He wasn't an absent daddy. But, you know, I think also maybe I created my own wall when I was going through this anxiety because I was so protective of Teddy and all these things I had to do. I think there was also maybe no way for him to get in that sense. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I don't, you know, I'm joking when I say he was useless, but I think like women, we put the whole thing on our backs and carry it. Do you know what I mean? You feel like you're failing if you don't, you have to, this is your job. This is your responsibility. You know, this is what a mother does. So I feel like, you know, I maybe didn't make that much room for him anyway, but he was a great daddy. He didn't do any of the night feeds. So I will call him out on that, but everything else he did.
So we have a lot of parents obviously listening to this podcast and we always like to share like the best piece of advice that you've ever been given or like a piece of advice you'd like to give to a new parent or, you know, an old parent, whatever.
Oh, well, my friend said to me once and it stuck in my head. And I don't know if this isn't advice. This was just like, it's dawned on me now that I'm a parent of four children. I'll start with this and then I'll then reverse it with like a positive. But I remember when, you know, that test you do when you're waiting for all the like genetic disorders to come through, you know, when you're pregnant and they've taken your blood and you wait 2 weeks to see if, you know, your baby has.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. And there's that waiting period. I remember with Teddy, I called my friend and I was like, I'm so nervous. What if something's wrong? You know, you go through that thing. And she had a child that was now like, you know, a couple months old, older. And she said, I said, I'm just so worried. And she goes, and you think it stops once you have the baby? She said, welcome to the rest of your life. And I was like, And it's so true that since then, you know, my first thing that I think of when I wake up is my kids. The last thing I think about when I go to bed is my kids, you know, and it is a parent's plight to constantly think about. I've never stopped thinking about my kids since the day I became a parent. I would say the best advice I could give anyone is that they are truly enough. And I don't mean that in like a cliche, you know, Hallmark greeting card sort of way. I just think I see a lot of parents, including myself, really underestimate what they're doing, you know, not give themselves enough credit, burn the candle at all ends and still think they're failing, including myself. And it's so much easier when someone else tells it to you than you tell yourself, but that you're enough. You know, it's like, it's a really, amazing job, but it's a difficult job being a parent, you know, and nobody is perfect. It's a demanding job. It's the only job where you have no time off, and that everything you're doing is enough. You know, it's like we all are doing the best we can. And lockdown, I think, has been a really challenging time for people to think they're doing enough, you know, as a parent, because now the demands are even more because your kids are there all day long. And I guess I would just say, yeah, that you're doing enough, you know, like your best is good enough. And make sure to drink regular copious amounts of wine.
You're our soul sister. Ida, listen, thank you so much. I just wanted to take this moment and say, I know that Georgia and I, well, I know that Georgia's feeling this as well. Your honesty is refreshing and
God, it's disturbing. I think my honesty is disturbing. I'm sorry I don't have any better advice. I'm still figuring it out. I still have no idea. I have no idea what I'm doing. I have humans that I'm responsible for and I have no clue, but I am doing my best. And thank you for letting me divulge all my experiences and my brutal honesty of the experience. I've had a lot of fun talking to you guys. I think it's great.
Thank you.
For this platform where moms can really share and talk about, you know, good, bad, ugly, everything in between. And I've just, yeah, I've really enjoyed it. So hopefully I haven't horrified or shocked too many people, and somebody's enjoyed, if just one person has enjoyed this chat.
Wait, we both loved it. So you're winning.
We
Thank
have.
You so much. Come back and see us soon.
Please.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, stay safe, ladies.
You
stay
too.
You too.
And stay strong in the game of motherhood. And okay. I will speak to you soon.
Drink more wine.
I've got the glass right beside me.
Oh, she is amazing. Can she please be on Your Best Mate?
I know. Please, Ida, if you're listening, you're invited to our Christmas party. You can tell us where we've got to go. You can tell us everything. Tell us what to do, what to wear. We'll be there, won't we, Zoe?
She's just mega, isn't she? She's funny. She's normal. Like when she said, you know, some of the time I thought like I was really smashing it as a parent, and other times I thought I was the worst mother in the world. I was like, yes, that is exactly how I felt.
I know, same. I mean, you know, when you sort of look at these huge, huge superstars, like, you know, like the Williamses, you don't sort of envisage that they go through the same sort of parenting fails and ups and downs as we do. But actually, when it comes down to it, we're all the same, aren't we? Everyone goes through it. Everyone has those feelings. Everyone has hard days. And it's reassuring to hear someone like that talk about it so openly as well.
Yeah, completely agree with you. And I also loved how she gave us a little insight into how her and Robbie met, you know.
Yes.
Like really felt you were part of it, just the fact that he stood her up before they'd even been on their first date, and then she was like, she said, didn't she, that she was standing in a market and then he rung again and he was like, you can't be crossing me, you don't even know me. It's like, go on, Robbie. I love that.
Absolutely. And if anyone's listening to this having just been stood up, you know, maybe you should give them a second chance after all,
if they look like Robbie Williams.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, maybe if they're a pop star. If they're not, then definitely
not. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, love that. I didn't want that chat to end.
No, me neither.
George and I are lining up two amazing people to come on the podcast next week, so you're going to be in for an absolute treat with that one. But as always, we would love you to rate, review and subscribe to the podcast. And please, if you have time, could you leave us a little review, because it really helps kind of spread the Made by Mama's word.
Yeah, absolutely. And we love reading them. It's really nice.
Yeah, no, it is. Okay.
It is so nice to hear like positive feedback. And also, if you want to drop us some constructive criticism, we will take that as well. But maybe just in our DMs or at Made by Mamas, or direct them to Zoe at Zoe Hardman.
Yes.
And we will see you on Friday.
We'll see you then.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.